上个我就把
that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
We're poor, we're poor. Ashe.
Ashe.
We're poor to the creative spirit. The great Ashe out of which we all emerge, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to that creative spirit by whatever name we know it, whatever name you hold in your heart, in your mind, whatever name your ancestors gave, whatever name you learned as a child, whatever name you believe it to be, whatever name you believe it to be in spirit or in science, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to the first human beings who came into existence on this planet, the first human beings who raised the first structures, who cooked the first meals, who taught the first children, who had the first children, the first Africans, the first people who stood upright, who walked, who figured out how to stay on this planet, who figured out how to pass that knowledge on to their children and their children's children, the mothers and fathers of civilization, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour the next libation to their grandchildren, their children's children, those who raised the great early civilizations of Kemet and Kush and Monomotapa, the great medieval civilizations of Ghana and Mali and Songhai and Kanem-Bornu. We pour to those who great the great civilizations of the Igbo people and the Hausa people and the Kikongo people and the Mbara people, the great Mande civilizations, the great Kikongo, the great civilizations of Southern Africa, the Bantu people, the great civilizations of Southeast Africa, the Dinka, the Shilluk, the Nuer. We pour to those millions who raised the foundations from which the world world would learn what it meant to be human in the world, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who, upon the arrival on the shores of people they had never seen before, found themselves captured and marched overland, found themselves perishing by the millions before they were held on the holding cells and the open-air pens on the coast of West, Central, Southern, and East Africa. We pour to the ancestors who did not know as they were stripped of all clothing and sent denuded into boats, packed like animals and strewn their bones across the floor of the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. We pour to them who in the last moment on Africa grabbed the sand and grabbed the dirt and put it in their mouths and understood that the only thing they might have to preserve their place in that continent was their memory of that place and their ability to pass it on to their children. We pour to them. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to those Africans and their children who, finding themselves cast adrift in Santiago, Cuba, who found themselves cast adrift in Puerto Spain, Trinidad, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, who found themselves cast adrift in New Orleans and Charleston and Mobile, who found themselves cast adrift in Salvador, Bahia, who found themselves cast adrift in Barbados and the archipelago that formed the Wayward and the Windward coasts. We found them in these places learning Portuguese and Spanish and French, whose often first words was, "Oh my God, oh Madre de Dios," who found themselves praying to survive and pass on to their children the memories. We pour to those ancestors who are represented in the thousands buried in all the square miles of where we stand and who sit here buried before us in 400 caskets forged of wood from West Africa with Adinkra symbols. Each one of them, each woman, man, and child, symbolic of millions. The children of those who could not be killed, we pour, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who somehow survived the hells of enslavement and fought for emancipation in the Caribbean, the French, British, Dutch Caribbean, who fought for emancipation in South America, who fought for emancipation in Central America, who fought the struggles we refer to as the Civil War in the United States, who came out of that, marched out of enslavement through Reconstruction, and found themselves making great migrations, eventually ending up in places like New York. Their children's children, who making a way for themselves became our great-great-grandparents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our parents. Those who, when the first bones were discovered in this space, held their hands and said, "Stop! No more! We are here to speak for those who can no longer speak with their mouths." We pour for those ancestors, some of whom came to Howard University in 2004 and followed these caskets all the way back to New York. We pray to the great ancestors, the ones whose names we know and the ones whose names we don't. And at this moment, as we pour this libation, I would ask anyone who feels comfortable to say the name of someone in your bloodline who is no longer physically here, but who you know made it possible for you to be here. Go ahead, let's hear the names. Haywood Carr.
Porter Griffin.
Thomas Lee Jr.
Evelyn Glover.
We pour to the names that we hold collectively. Ganga Zumba in Brazil. Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, and Henri Christophe in Haiti. We pour to the great Avengers, Nanny of the Maroons of Jamaica. We pour to the great ancestors, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass. Say the names that you study. Who are the names of the ancestors that you have come to hold in your heart and your mind as you hope that you can do what they did for us, for your children and children's children? Let's say some of those famous names.
Malcolm X,
Martin Luther King,
Muhammad,
John Henry Clark, John
Dr. Khaled
Jackson,
Muhammad,
Jacob Carruthers. And finally, two final libations. We pour to those who make it possible for us to do what we do. We pour to these rangers who stand guardian over this sacred space. We pour to these Africans and these folks who have come from Howard University, the staff, the faculty, the administrators who brought us here today to bear witness. This is not a libation, but an affirmation, because their hearts still beat, their tongues still speak, their minds still think, and their minds still wish the best for us. We pour for all of those people who surrounded us on this journey today and made it possible for us to be here. We pour this affirmation of thanks, Ashe.
Ashe.
And finally, we pour to your children's children's children who will one day stand on this space and speak your name.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting, or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
When I look at Africa, many questions come to mind. Many times I ask myself, what would happen if Mwalimu were to rise up and see what is happening? Many times I ask myself, what would happen if Kwame Nkrumah and Patrice Emery Lumumba were to rise up and see what is happening? Because what they would be confronted with is an Africa where the Democratic Republic of Congo is unsettled. There is a war going on there, but it is not on the front pages of our newspapers, because we don't even control our newspapers and the media. As I speak to you, the Central African Republic is at war, but we talk of it only mutedly. As I speak to you now, in South Sudan, the youngest nation in Africa, the Nuer have risen against the Dinka. As I speak to you now, Eritrea is unsettled. As I speak to you now, there is unease in Egypt as there is unease in Libya. In Niger, it is no better. In Senegal, in the Casamance, it is no better. In Somalia, it is no better. Africa is at war with herself. This is what they would be confronted with. They would be confronted with an Africa which statisticians and romantic economists say is growing, but which in truth is stagnated. That is the Africa that they would be confronted with. They would be confronted with an African which, as Professor Mlama intimated in our presentation here, is an African which is suffering from schizophrenia. He does not know herself. They would be confronted with an African whose young men and women have no interest and no love for their continent. They would be confronted with an Africa where young men and young women are constantly humiliated at the embassies of European countries and at the United States of America as they seek the almighty green card. They would be confronted with an Africa where young men and women from Niger, Nigeria, Senegal, Mali, and Mauritania drown in the Mediterranean as they seek to be enslaved in Europe. This time round, Africans are not wailing and kicking as they are being taken away to be enslaved. They are being seen wailing and kicking as they seek to be enslaved in Europe and America. This is the tragedy of Africa. They'll be confronted with an African where people have lost their self-pride. An Africa where Africans are not proud of their things. An Africa where in the hotels of Dar es Salaam or Nairobi, even food has foreign names. When we fry potatoes, we call them French fries, even when they are fried in Dar es Salaam. That is the Africa that they would be confronted with. They would be confronted with another Africa. An Africa which does not tell her story. An Africa whose story is told by Europe and America, the CNN, Radio Deutsche Welle, Radio France. That is the Africa they would be confronted with. They would be confronted with young men and women who have no pride in Africa. When they want to enjoy themselves, they sing the praises of football teams from Europe and America. It is Manchester United. It is Arsenal. It is Real Madrid. And Barcelona, not Yanga, not Mufulira Wanderers, not Gor Mahia, not FC Leopards. No. That is the Africa that they would be confronted with. They would be confronted with an Africa which does not enjoy the theater and drama. That Africa celebrates Leonardo DiCaprio. It celebrates Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt. The Africa does not celebrate Genevieve Nagy of Nigeria or Rita Dominic or Lou Jacobs of Nigeria. It does not celebrate Bongo Wood or Nollywood or Riverwood. It celebrates Hollywood. That is the Africa with which they would be confronted. They would be confronted with African women whose greatest source of joy is cheap grade B Mexican soap opera, La Patrona, La Mujer de Mi Vida, The Rich Also Cry. Why must we remind ourselves of these realities? Because throughout the ages, the battle has always been the battle of the mind. And if your mind is conquered, then you are going nowhere. And that is why in the ages of enlightenment in Europe, the great René Descartes said, cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. And therefore, if Africans are to begin to make a contribution in their affairs, Africans must begin to think. But the question is, are we thinking? We have universities in their numbers. Tanzania has universities, including Dar es Salaam. Nairobi has universities, as indeed Kampala, as indeed South Africa, Johannesburg. We have all these universities. We have engineers. But our roads are not being made by Tanzanian civil engineers. It is the Chinese who are present in this assembly who are making our roads. So we have engineers who cannot even make roads. We have doctors whom we have trained. But when we are sick, particularly if we are of the political class, depending on who colonized you, if you are colonized by the United Kingdom, you rush to London. If you are colonized by the French, you rush to Paris. If you are colonized by the Portuguese, you rush to Lisbon. And if you are colonized by the Spaniards, you rush to Madrid, Spain. And recently, because the Asians are beginning to get their act together, we run to India. And very lately, because the Arabs are also beginning to get their act together, we run to Dubai. Notwithstanding that we have the Kenyatta hospitals of this country, the Muhimbilis of Tanzania, the Chris Hani Baragwanaths of South Africa, and the Mama Yemos of Kinshasa in Zaire, or the Democratic Republic of Congo, but we have no faith in our doctors. In the area of education, we also don't have faith. Our political class introduced something that they call free education, that is free indeed, free of knowledge. Because they are so suspicious of those institutions that the typical African politician would not dare take their children to those schools. Their children will be educated in the British system, in the American system, so that when they graduate, they go to the United Kingdom, to the United States. Not that there is anything wrong with those institutions, but the agenda is wrong because our leaders long lost the script and ought to be described for who they are, our misleaders. But we are co-authors of our own misfortune. Whenever we are given an opportunity to elect our leaders, we are given a blank check. And if you give me a blank check and you allow me to analogize, and you say that I'm given the blank check to buy a Mercedes Benz, what we do is that when we are called upon, having been so empowered, we buy what one calls a tuk-tuk from India and expect it to behave like a Mercedes Benz. How does that happen? Because what we do is to elect thieves. We elect hyenas to take care of goats. And when the goats are consumed, we wonder why. Tank
with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep, and peace and blessings to all of you, my brothers and sisters. Thank you for joining us today. We thank Dr. P.L.O. Lumumba for giving us a powerful introduction to the reason and purpose of our program tonight. We are in a battle for our minds. We are in a struggle for our minds. And so we have to consistently be reminded of what our agenda needs to be and how we need to continue to fight. So we thank him for those remarks. And then, of course, my great brother James Brown said, "Make say it loud. I'm black and I'm proud." I love it. So anyway, thank all of you for being here. We have a really excited program tonight. I have a very good friend and our guest who is the author of a dynamic piece of literature called Why We Shouldn't Call Our Ancestors Slaves. And his name is Brother LaRue Ned. And we're going to hear from him in just a few minutes. He is on board. And we thank him for coming forward. We want to talk a little bit about that. It's a very layered topic. There are so many aspects to that, so many questions that come out of why we shouldn't call our ancestors slaves. What does that mean? And so we're going to talk tonight with him and our guests, as usual. We have a wonderful panel of community guests that are already online that always provide us with excellent dialogue. And I want all of them to know I do appreciate you. I do not underestimate you whatsoever. And I thank you for being here every Tuesday night and joining us here on the Black Reality Think Tank. The Black Reality Think Tank is sponsored by Motherland Media. Motherland Media is a network system that is owned and operated by Brother Oshiemi Adelabu. He has a program called African Perspectives that we're going to talk about in just a little while, but we appreciate him and appreciate his sponsorship. The program is also produced by the Sankofa Historical Society, which consists of a group of folks, some young people out of Howard University, and we've just recently gotten some new individuals to join us from Clark Atlanta University, and they are part of the team of helping us to promote this program, to also put out material and find material in those wonderful archives that are housed in those universities. So we need their help, and we do appreciate what they're doing for us. So we thank you. But we're going to get into our reception. It was kind of a lengthy opening, but I wanted to do that because of the fact that it has meaning to what we are going to talk about. P.L.O. Lumumba is a powerful brother, and he has some very interesting ideas about Mother Africa and basically in the relationship to connection to us now here that are settled in the diaspora. And so we wanted to have him to open that. We are going to do what we always normally do is give our ancestral profile that we do here. We honor our ancestors because it is upon their shoulders that we stand. They have developed the pathway for us, and we are following it and creating that path as a continuity for the generation to follow behind us. And so very clearly we want to do that tonight. Here is a quote from our ancestor that we are going to honor. He says, "We have to work at decolonizing our mentality and achieving happiness within the limits of sacrifice we should be willing to make. We have to recondition our people." I'll repeat that. We have to recondition our people to accept themselves as they are, to not be ashamed of their real situation, to be satisfied with it, and to glorify it even unto death. These words came from a brother by the name of Thomas Laidor Noel Sankara. Thomas Sankara. He was born December 21st, 1949. He transitioned into the ancestor world October 15th, 1987. He was the president of Burkina Faso, which many have labeled as a Marxist-Leninist revolutionary group, and someone who probably was a part of a lot of the Pan-African ideas that we saw coming to light at the beginning of the 80s, from carryover from the 70s. So Thomas Sankara is who we will honor tonight. As I said, he was born in 1949 in Yako, French Upper Volta, as it was called. He was the third of 10 children. Let me we have some distraction in the background. Any of you, your mics are open. We can hear you very clearly, and we just want to make sure that our audience can hear all of our things. But anyway, we move on. He grew up as a Roman Catholic, and his parents wanted him to become a priest. He joined the military instead, which he used to gain a scholarship to the Kadiogo Military Academy. While there, he fell prey to the militant leftist agenda and became a communist, an anti-imperialist, a Pan-Africanist, an otherwise pretty darn cool guy, they say. He was appointed the Secretary of State for Information, but resigned, probably because they were so bourgeois in their nature and behavior. He issued a governmental call-out post denouncing their anti-labor tendencies, for which he was automatically deported to a remote military camp. But he came back. Sankara became the president of Burkina Faso as a result of a coup d'etat on August 4, 1983. While President Sankara initiated many wonderful changes to the structure and policies within his country, primarily focused on fighting corruption, promoting public health, women's rights, environmental preservation, and becoming self-sufficient, he remained president for 4 years before being assassinated. Some of the good things that Sankara's administration accomplished was they redistributed feudal land to the workers. They implemented irrigation and fertilization programs, which heavily increased the cotton and wheat production. The increase in wheat production eventually brought the country to complete self-sufficiency in food production. He vaccinated 2.5 million Burkina children against measles, meningitis, yellow fever in just 2 weeks, raising the rates of immunization from 11% to 75%. He planted 10 million trees over the course of 15 months, called the People's Development Program. He banned female genital mutilation. He forced marriages or either polygamy situations. He increased access to clean water, electricity, and contraceptives. He had a solid government standard. The Mercedes-Benzes and the Renault 5 were not allowed in Africa. They could use the cheaper version of the Renault, but not the Mercedes. He ordered wealthy civil servants to utilize 1 month's salary for public projects. He converted the what was known as the Ouagadougou Army Provision Store to a state-owned supermarket open to all the first of its kind in the country. On October 15, 1987, Sankara was killed in a coup d'etat organized by the ex-BFF called the Blaise Compaoré, which is the ex-colonial French army. It may have been involved in this death, as they have refused to release their security archives related to this assassination. It was often said, it's not like the Western government agents have ever done anything of this sort, but we know what the truth is. And so very clearly, this may have been a European foreign idea that was took the life of Thomas Sankara. Thomas Sankara, Pan-Africanist brother, very powerful. Get an opportunity to do, by all means, read something about him and take a little study of him. We had a guest that has been on our program several times, Brother Bruce Bridges, wrote a book called about the African mind, kind of what we're talking about today. And he very clearly has talked openly about Thomas Sankara as well as others. So we want you to encourage you to take a look at him and some of those other Pan-African leaders as well. Tonight, we want to ask the question why we shouldn't call ourselves our ancestors slaves. Let me repeat that. Why we shouldn't call our ancestors slaves. And this book was written by a dear brother, dear friend, Brother LaRue Ned from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And he wrote this book back in 1993. And he's been moving the idea along for years. Anywhere you go, anywhere you talk to Brother LaRue, you will hear him say, we shouldn't call our ancestors slaves. And I must admit, and I've told him that, I struggled with that just a little bit in the early years when he first introduced it to me. He recently gave me another copy of the book, just in case I had lost mine, but I had not. I still had it. He also wrote another book we're going to talk to him about a little bit tonight called Black Laws, and I want to ask him a little bit about that book as well. But a very dynamic piece, and he's going to tell any of you in our audience who does not have a copy of it, how you can get a copy of this, why we shouldn't call our ancestors slaves. So with that, let me introduce to our audience Brother LaRue Ned, a very good friend who is going to talk about his book, Why We Shouldn't Call Our Ancestors Slaves. Good evening, Brother LaRue. How you doing?
All right. Hotel.
Great. Hotel to you, my brother. So thank you so much for coming on, being on tonight. You know, this topic has drawn a lot of attention to our Facebook website. We've had several hits. Did you see the recent piece that I sent you, like, maybe later this afternoon?
I think I did.
Because I want to talk about that. If you don't have it, I'll pull it up and I'll just read what the brother sent us. He sent us a very long statement that has some very interesting analogies. I'm not going to make any personal statement about it right now. I want to pass it on to you first and let you hear it. And I hope if you do have it, maybe you can take a look at it before we get to talk about it. If not, then I'll just read it. But you've written a masterpiece here, and a lot of people have embraced it over the years, I know personally. I know you have come to several of our ASCAC meetings and that we used to have in Milwaukee, and very clearly you have talked about it. I know you have been on Brother Oshi Adelamu's program, Black African Perspective. You've talked about the book on there. And as a matter of fact, you even came on when I was doing my program on Blog Talk. You did. You came on and talked about it a little bit. But now we're going to, you know, a lot of times in terms of knowledge and things, we grow. We grow, our ideas grow. We take on a little bit more different perspectives as we face life. And so we can look at it now from a whole another vantage point, but at the same time, you know, embrace what you have tried to say and what you wanted to do do with this particular writing. But we appreciate you anyway. You want to tell us a little, just a little bit about yourself, when the audience can just have an idea of who the author was and maybe your interest in history and, you know, how you got started with this. As I said, you wrote it back in 93. So maybe just tell our folks just a little bit.
It kind of goes on back a long way, even from the time I graduated from high school.
No, not quite that far, but that's okay. I know you was a good brother then, too.
And the thing that shocked me was I went to college, and I'm originally from Omaha, Nebraska. Mm-hmm. And when I went to college, I learned that Malcolm X was born in Omaha, Nebraska. That shocked me. And from then on, I knew that something was wrong with my education.
Okay.
I should have known that before right. I went to college. Anyway, but I listened to Malcolm. He has a pattern, a way of thinking, and I learned from that. And so, but anyway, over time, my good friend Matthew Stelly,
he brought me
to Milwaukee.
Oh, yeah.
And I started writing for the Courier. And I was writing a column I used to have to put a column in the paper every once a week.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I was writing an article about slavery, so I wanted to be kind of accurate in what I was talking about. So I went to the dictionary and looked up the word slave. And it dawned on me, according to that definition, that the word slave did not fit our ancestors. Mm-hmm. Because of our resistance to slavery. And so then that's how I got started as a column. Then it grew into a little pamphlet. Then, you know, one edition I made. But I'm always improving on it. So it's an idea that continues to grow.
Okay. Yeah, and it has grown on me, too. It really has, because I think when you first brought it to me, I kind of had a little rejection to it, because I thought maybe we got tied up on too much on semantics. We speak a foreign tongue. We speak German. You know, English is German. And so obviously within the framework of a German tongue, you know, what difference would it make? We are captives of that anyway. But, you know, it makes more sense now as I look at it over the years and has grown in terms of its start. And talking to you over years about it, you know, as well. Right. So that's kind of where I want to start. I want to talk about, we don't speak Kiswahili. We don't speak any of the languages of Africa. Our frame of reference and mind in terms of, you know, our tongue is European. We speak English. English is German. It's a form of the Anglo-Saxon tongue. So why then does that make a difference in terms of what we say about anything? You know, if we're captives, if you wanted to look at it like that. As a captive, how do you explain that? How do you get into that?
It is a matter of semantics. And semantics just simply means the study of the meaning of words and phrases. Whatever language you're in, you need to know what those words that you are using mean. Mm-hmm. In Africa, we know there's thousands of languages, different languages. So in a way, it doesn't kind of matter what language you're using, but whether you understand the concepts that the words you are using, what those words stand for, what those concepts are. And so if we're going to speak English, then we should understand what the words we're using in English so that we can have a conformity of communication.
Okay. Okay.
So no matter what language you're using, we need to know that we mean the same thing by the words we're using.
Okay. Okay.
And so a lot of us have an idea of what is meant by the word slave, but when you put that with the images that we see in the movies, on TV, and all of that, it kind of defines the word for us.
Okay.
And so we accept the word slave, and we accept those images altogether, even without having a clear definition of what the word means.
Okay. Can you give us a little etymology of the word slave? What is its origin, and what does it actually mean in the German tongue, the word slave?
I'm surprised. The word slave didn't even come out till like the mid-1400s. Mm-hmm. That's spelled S-L-A-V-E. But before that, they use the term Slav, and Slav is spelled different. They might have pronounced it the same way, but it was spelled different. But in its original form, the Slavic people that the word they derived the word from meant noble people.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Germans captured the Slavs. And so anybody that was defeated and where they use that term Slav or slave, if you want to. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they pronounced it back then.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, when they came out with the definition of the word slave in the mid-1400s, they used the letters to define the word slave, and the meaning was not the same. Because the words, the meaning of the word slave is,
Right ahead, go right ahead. Somebody, I think somebody came in on, but go right ahead, finish it.
Okay. The original definition of the word slave, I went to the library, and when I was doing the column, I went to the library and I found a dictionary that was 100 years old. And it's something when you hold a book in your hand, it's 100 years old.
Right.
And I looked for the most recent one, and it was 100 years, more than 100 years later. But the definition was almost identical for at least 100 years.
Okay.
And it's the key phrases are whose personal service is wholly under the control of another, one who has lost the power of resistance, or one who surrenders himself to any power whatever.
Okay.
And that's some of the key phrases of it. And those are the kind of images that are being projected when we watch Roots and the other movies about slavery. Just be quiet and go along with the program and this and that and other. But those, that's not what really happened. And so the story of our resistance really is what led me to understand that this word does not apply to our ancestors, because the Europeans or Euro-Americans would not have turned us loose if they didn't have to. And their history clearly shows that they did not have kindness in their heart for us.
Right.
So they didn't turn us loose because they all of a sudden woke up one day and said, well, you know what? Slavery is wrong. They knew that slavery, they call it a necessary evil when they instituted it in the beginning, when they was establishing the 13 colonies and all of that. They knew that it was an evil system, but they called it a necessary evil.
Right.
So they didn't change their mind and fight a civil war over the fact that they were doing this because they were looking out for us.
Okay, so now what impact does that have on the mind people that do use that word, as well as on the Africans themselves who were actually caught into that system. Are you suggesting that there's some impact which makes it a danger to say it? Tell us about that. Explain that a little bit.
Going along with the images and the word slave.
Okay.
So when we call our ancestors slaves, we're really saying that they were totally defeated by a people who was saying, give me liberty and give me death.
Okay.
But we were accepting slavery without much resistance. That's what we're taught. And that sets up the idea of inferiority of spirit.
Right.
And so when and negative self-esteem. And I go into kind of a thing where one idea will lead to another. And so now we have a whole system of beliefs about black people, by black people, that are negative towards black people. And I think that that's one of the reasons why we see so much black-on-black violence, crime, okay, self-hatred, self-destructive behavior, that kind of stuff. It's because of the way we're viewing each other, because of the way we view ourselves.
Okay.
And when we see ourselves as descendants of slaves, which is an inferior status, not the position, but an inferior state of being, because we were in slavery. We need to understand the difference. We were in slavery, but that doesn't necessarily make us slaves.
Right. Meaning that we did not surrender to the will of things. Would I be correct in saying that?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
Now there were, of course, when they got the gun on you and it's daytime and this and that and the other, you know, we had to devise personalities fake personalities to fool the mind of the oppressor.
Right.
So we put on fake personalities like Step and Fetch It, Y'all's the Boss, all of that. That was to calm down the God complex in them. But I call it acting. We were acting. Okay. But at night, when they went to sleep, or when they was, we put so much fear in the land that they developed a word for it. It's called negrophobia.
Right. Yeah, sure did. Yep.
Right. And if you remember in Roots, which they definitely underemphasized, when Chicken George went to the master and the master met him at the door with the gun, Chicken George couldn't understand it.
Okay.
But the so-called master, he was so afraid because of what they, and that's when they mentioned Nat Turner.
Right. Okay.
Right.
And you know that's why I like what you did in this book, because you kind of did what one of our ancestors, Richard Moore, did about the use of the word Negro and the ugliness of that name and what it has psychologically done on the mind, or what it does on the mind of people that use that. Because at one point in time, all African-oriented people living in America were called Negroes. As a matter of fact, that's what's on my birth certificate. I was born in the 40s, and on my birth certificate it states that I was a Negro, and what the damage of that is. So, and really, this is what you do. I want to read a statement, the one I told you about, and I want you to kind of just respond to it, and I'll try to read it slow so you can hear it. It comes from a brother who is he is a member of the Kemet Historical Society. And this is a group on Facebook that I always follow. And this was on our, he had posted this on the Black Reality Think Tank website on Facebook. And this is what he said. I had a photograph of a drawing of Africans captured in a slave ship. And they were all piled in there in one bunch together, you know, kind of like what it was. And this is what he said. He said, these people were slaves and an embarrassment to our race. They should have died with dignity, protesting their treatment. They shouldn't have been worked a single day. But no, they also decided to give their oppressors offsprings so the slave business can continue. Their behavior is inexcusable. There wasn't even a little bit of hope for a better situation in those days. So why exactly did they work all day, every day, their whole lives? You want to respond to that a little bit?
Yeah, you know what? There's a statement I say in my book. Do you believe the only thing we did was sing, beg, pray, and run away? I got a book here. It's called Follow the Drinking Gourd, man. And it's for children.
Right.
And in this book, they're describing some of the atrocities. And the woman didn't even mention the fact that the Africans even got mad for being treated like that. But these are people who are educated by Europeans.
Right.
And okay. So they have that European perspective.
And yeah, and that's so, the idea that, you know, we didn't fight back or, you know, we just sit there and took that. And a lot of folk believe that. Uh-huh.
I'm willing to say that at that time, every African was engaged in some kind of resistance to slavery. That's only human nature. And for us to believe that we didn't do that,
uh-huh.
That's the negative statement about our human nature.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure is.
Yeah. And so our kids, man, when they go into school and they're being taught this, then they feel it crushes the spark of genius in them. That's what Carter G. Woodson said. Their education crushes the spark of genius in us.
Because
we trust that school system, we tend to believe that that's what it was. And, you know, and the rest of what this culture projects about us as a people.
Right. And then you got to remember there was a time during the years of captivity that a lot of the political and the social development of the Euro world, of the slaveholding class, was to paint a picture that slavery wasn't bad, that it was really very helpful to the Africans, you know, and that's called the slave apologists, Africans are really basically loyal and they good. I mean, that's what Uh-oh. Uncle Tom's Cabin was about.
Hello? Okay.
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Brother LaRue, can you hear me? Brother LaRue?
Yeah.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, yeah, that basically the slavery wasn't bad, that things were good, that, you know, the blacks liked working on the plantation. They had fun all day. They, you know, and a lot of those songs that Stephen Foster, who I understand was a black man, wrote about my old Kentucky home where all the darkies roam. You know, those kind of images were painted to say that, you know, hey, slavery ain't this bad. You know, what's all up here? And people say it today. That's what that fool in the White House said, Mitch McConnell. Remember, he said that. He said, you know, well, you know, slavery, you know, was helped out kind of thing. So, yeah, that was a lot of that. You got to remember that's tied into some of this as well.
Exactly.
What has been some of the other comments from outside about your book? Did anybody review that with one of the black press or anything? Has it ever been reviewed?
No.
Okay.
No, that hasn't happened yet.
Okay.
That's interesting. But mm-hmm. you know what? When I first started speaking on it, people would get angry. What do you mean we weren't slaves? Because...
Right, right.
Okay, because we have this mindset. We have things that we believe are true. And if somebody brings in something that contradicts what you believe is true, that upsets your whole chain of thought. And in the book, I'm saying that ideas are like living things.
Yes, they are.
And they struggle to survive. And so what you believe is true is going to struggle to stay in your true in your mind as true. And so we get that kind of resistance from people, especially those that have the European, well, all of us got a European mindset.
Right.
But some more than others.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we got right. A lot of work to do. That's why I said this whole discussion is layered with things about mentality and, you know, the African mind, and that's what Brother P.L.O. Lumumba, that's what he's talking about. He said, we got to get our minds back, man. That's what Thomas Sankara said. You know, we lost our living minds. We've got a formula that we think that old adage about the white man's ice is colder. We really,
right.
that's still with us, man. That ain't going nowhere. And we've got to do the process.
Eventually it will. I believe that If it becomes, let's say, common knowledge or a common understanding that we understand why we shouldn't call our ancestors slaves, and there are four main reasons, that if that becomes a common understanding among American Africans, then we'll start to think differently. It'll be a paradigm shift.
Right.
And then that will cause us to think other things, to accept other positive ideas that we now reject and say aren't true. Black people, we're getting along with each other under the circumstances pretty. Let me say this. Anybody who went through what we went through, I don't think they would have come out as well as we have to this day.
You're right. It's real issues there. That's right. That's real talk.
Right.
That's exactly right.
But anyway, it's kind of like a domino effect.
Right.
So if we can start thinking and understanding, it's really important to understand it more than just to say it. Why we shouldn't call our ancestors slaves, then that'll start like a domino effect.
Right.
I believe.
Yeah.
In our thinking.
Because now we're even into the idea that a lot of folks don't like to say black. They don't want to use the word black. And, you know, we've gone through a lot. You know, it boils down to that whole identity crisis that
exactly.
We have faced from day one. Exactly. Who are we? What are we? Who are we? And trying to reach a consensus on that as we teach our children is what's so critical. Because at one time we were Negroes, we were coloreds. We even answered to the N-word, the nigger word. We used to answer to that.
You know what? I challenge people to go to the dictionary and look that word up.
Yes.
Because most of us have a misunderstanding of what the dictionary means by it. Now, we have the ability to take a negative word and make it positive. Like we say, oh man, that's bad, which we really mean is good.
That's right.
Or
that's
right. You know what I'm saying?
That's exactly right. We do that.
Right. We have the ability to do that.
Right.
And so the same with the N-word. But the debate over the N-word really goes to show you how important the names are that we call ourselves.
That's true.
Are. And so I think it's of ultimate importance for us to straighten out this idea of calling our ancestors slaves.
I agree. And you've done a masterful job here in this book. We are talking to a good brother, friend from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. His name is LaRue Ned. He's written a book called Why We Shouldn't Call Our Ancestors Slaves, and he's given us some insight into this work. We want to continue to talk to him. I want to go to our audience a little bit. And
let me just say this. I want to give you these four reasons why we shouldn't call our ancestors slaves before you do that.
Okay.
Number one, the definition does not fit, and it is a
Okay.
bogus word. Number two, it has a negative effect on our self-esteem.
Okay.
And it is a form of blasphemy to call our ancestors slaves. That's a spiritual violation. It's a form of blasphemy, and it leads to abandonment of form.
Okay.
And, or another word for form, we might say, our African mindset.
Okay, I like that. Okay, let's hold those four, because we want to deal with those four concepts of why, you know, we shouldn't do that. And you are, and as I said to earlier, you know, we are listening to the Black Reality Think Tank, and our guest is Brother LaRue Ned, and he's written a masterful book. He lives here in Milwaukee, and he's a very good friend. If any of you, our listening audience, would be interested in calling us to give us your point of view. To give us your point of view or to ask questions, our number here is area code 215-490-9832. And I repeat, 215-490-9832. And you can ask questions or make your comment. So let me go to the to our internet, Brother Ruru, and to our listeners. We have several people online here, and some of them you know, some you might not know, but there's one here I think you do remember. His name is Brother James Pugh.
Yes.
Yeah, Brother Pugh, dynamic mind, brilliant mind, very brilliant mind. Let's see what Brother
brilliant,
Pugh.
Brilliant brother.
He knows your work, so I'm sure he can add to. Brother Pugh, what do you want to say about your former homeboy?
I think that obviously his points are strong. His thesis is real important. There are a couple of things I'd like to say. First of all, in terms of the way things are today, you know, just like we use the word black, but nobody uses the word Negro or colored. And people who use the word Negro or colored, it's pretty clear to us and everybody that, you know, that they have an agenda on their mind.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
And so there are a couple of things. And so, and then the other thing, he talks about dictionary definitions. That's denotation. And one of the issues with, in fact, he even mentions that when he says that, you know, we can take words and the words can have a different connotation for us than their denotation. For example, the dictionary definition of something may be bad, but the connotation for us may be good. You know, that was, you know, another example. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I'd like to say is that, first of all, when you say that that one of the things this internalization of slavery does. Oh yeah. Here's another point. There's just a ton of points that need to be made. This is a rich theme that you've introduced, and so I kind of don't want to take up a lot of time, but I want to be kind of precise. You know, one of the things that, you know, in terms of, you know, you're talking about our image of ourselves, and you're saying if we internalize the word slavery associated with our ancestors, aside from degrading them and being untrue, et cetera, it internalizes some stuff about us, et cetera, et cetera. Well, one of the ways to normalize what you're talking about or make it plain or make it accessible to people today, that's one of the debates that women are having today with their image. In other words, that's one of the debates that people have today, even with when you use the word basketball player or hip hop, or you use the word hoodie. In other words, the ideal is that what folks are attempting to do, one group of people are attempting to associate negatives with your image because they're interested in degrading you. And another group is attempting to associate positives to elevate your image. And so one of the things I'd like to say is that, you know, just like your hair, if you process it after a while, the roots, you know, will come back. And so it says that any socialization that I do, anything I do to get you to internalize some view of yourself that's actually foreign to you, like, for example, if I call you a Christian and tell you that being a Christian is submissive. Well, I have to lay that treatment on you every week, because since it's contrary to your nature, just like your roots, you know, they're going to come back. And right. I'll leave with the final thing. You had mentioned whenever I hear people talk about differentiating the African mindset from the non-African mindset or the white mindset, I'd like to elaborate that, because I don't think I think it might be helpful for people to appreciate it. This was that concept you were talking about, ethos, with Dr. Kwanzaa, Dr. Coringa, right. and the Black ethos. And so to just summarize succinctly, the difference between a Black or a life-affirming mindset and a life-denying mindset, because I think that might be helpful.
Uh-huh.
Black people prefer biology to technology. In other words, everybody faces death. But when you prefer biology, what you're saying is that I'm going to fight death with life. I'm going to produce more children. That's how I'm going to live, through my children. On the other hand, when you prefer technology, you're saying that I'm not going to produce children. I'm going to personally attempt to live forever. And so, you know, this whole notion of immortality and whatnot,
that's
the first dimension, is that they prefer technology to biology. The second dimension of the difference between a life-affirming Black people and a life-denying white people is that Black people prefer ecology or nature to economics. In other words, they want to live in harmony with nature, whereas economics means I want to impose my will upon nature.
Right.
The third dimension of the African ethos is that Black people expect to be able to learn from every creature in nature. In fact, I was listening to someone today talk about in Proverbs, it was saying, listen to the ants. And the interesting topic was made was that these same people who were saying that we're superior to other creatures are also, the ants don't have to look, you know, the ants don't have to watch us to learn anything. Why is it that we have to learn? And so maybe we're not as superior as we claim. But
right.
But on the other hand, so whereas the Africans are prepared to observe every rock, every weed, every drop of water, every roach, because they can learn something from them, the non-African ethos assumes that it needs to look for these godlike people who are superior to everybody and somehow or another emulate them. And then the final dimension of this African ethos is that the African people believe that doing the right thing produces might, and that to do the right thing, you need to follow your heart. On the other hand, the life-denying ethos says that might itself makes right, and
right,
that
right.
What you should use is not your heart, but rather your mind. And so I'll just leave it at that. But man, this is a rich thesis. Here's the one question I have for you.
Okay.
Today, historians, you know, they don't use the word slave. They, you know, in other words, they when you talk to conscious historians, they talk about people being enslaved, but they don't call
right,
them slaves.
Right.
So could you elaborate on that? In other words, do you see things happening in society that suggest that folks are getting your message?
Yes, I do see that. And I do have a being as how went in depth on the subject. Enslaved can imply one of two things. It can imply a state of being, or it can imply a condition. And so I noticed a lot of people that once they realize maybe we shouldn't call them slaves, they want to say enslaved. Now, that could mean enslavery, which is a term I prefer over enslaved, if that's what you mean. But the condition of being a slave could also mean enslaved. It could mean the same thing. So for clarity, I suggest that people would use the word enslavery if that's what they mean.
Well, okay. what they were saying is that they don't want to use passive language. that when you use the language enslaved, it implies that that's an action that somebody did. In other words, that's not a state of being. That's not your condition.
Right, right.
That's something being imposed upon you.
That's right. That's right.
You were a person who was enslaved, which is, by the way, the equivalent of your expression in slavery. So but certainly that's the intent of those historians who make the distinction between saying that African people were enslaved as opposed to slaves.
Let me tell you something that happened. When I first started putting the book out, remember I was saying that the definition of the word slave went almost 100 years with the same definition, almost virtually the exact same definition for 100 years.
Okay.
Then after I put the book out in 93, because I keep going to dictionaries and looking up and seeing what's happening, and the dictionary started to use different terms. Like, they started changing it up. Let me see if I can find it. The adjusted definition, that's what I call it.
Okay.
And in the adjusted definition, they use a bond servant. But a bond servant is not the same as a bond servant does not.
Yeah, that's what the Bible calls it. That's what's in the Bible.
Right. Bond servant, property, abjectly subservient, a machine that depends on another, chattel, and to work hard as a verb. But if we really understand slavery, then we will understand that slavery was a process that no other people on this planet ever went through. And so there were phases to slavery. This doesn't mean somebody makes you work. Slavery was about the control of the African mind. And there was a process in order for that to happen. And the biggest and the most devastating one was what I call the culture mind transplant. And that's when they took out the African mind and replaced it with the European mind.
Right.
But what happened was they could not remove the African spirit. So we practice Christianity in an African way. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the African spirit, but the conflict comes in is that the spirit and the thought process ain't matching up.
Right, that's true.
So it's not working for us, but we did use it well enough to help us get through slavery. And in studying Nat Turner, he even used the Bible to justify what he did, but he was only the tip of the iceberg. If we realize that we're the same people then that we are now, then you know how we acted under slavery. I mean, if you see how we acting now.
Yeah.
And we living relatively good.
Okay.
Black people got nothing to eat. Most black people got clothes, we got a place to stay. Most black people, you know what I'm saying? And still acting a fool.
Right.
Because of the condition of the oppression has changed, but we're still in a state of resistance.
Okay.
So
let me ask, you got
you
a bunch of folks.
How we acted then.
Right. Brother Renew, you
but
got a bunch of folks
that
on the
Europeans don't want us to know.
Okay, you got a group of folks online now, Brother LaRue. LaRue, Brother LaRue, let me go to some of these other. You got a bunch of folks online who want to talk to you.
Doctor, can I make one more tight comment?
Okay. Then I got to go to some
more,
of these other folks.
Right. One more tight comment. I was listening to an African agricultural economist today, and she was talking about the fact that in Ghana, where she's from, she's all over Africa. And she was differentiating the attitude that Africans have when they're being advised by Europeans about, you know, what technologies they should adopt, mm-hmm. versus the attitude that, for example, Asians have and others. And her whole point was that the Africans, they were assuming that they didn't know anything and that they just needed to open themselves up and accept anything that the West had to offer. And she was pointing out that the Africans had indigenous solutions that were better than the proposed solutions that the West was offering.
Right.
But because they assumed that the whites were superior, that they were capitulating.
Mm-hmm.
And she contrasted that with the Asians, where when the bankers would come and advise something, there would be extensive discussion where real effort had to be made to demonstrate that the Western way was superior to the Asian way before they would even think of adopting it. So that's a case where by using these terms of slavery and so on,
mm-hmm.
it causes us to internalize a value system that we don't have any value, which opens us up. And by the way, you found that the image that black people had of themselves changed after the Haitian Revolution. Prior to the Haitian Revolution, most African people were doing everything they could do to disassociate themselves from Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But as a result of the success of the Haitian Revolution, all of a sudden African people began to have pride. And so I think that what's really going on is folks are trying to socialize you, and if they can put a label or put an image in your mind of yourself, what did Carter G. Woodson say? If I can tell you that... you know, that you're born, you know, to come in the back door, you'll make one if there's
right,
not, you
right,
know, and so on.
Right, exactly.
Let me let somebody else get a look in.
Okay. We are talking with Brother LaRue Ned. He is the author of a book called Why We Shouldn't Call Our Ancestors Slaves. And we've been discussing some of the many areas that this book embraces as it relates to captivity, the African system of enslavement. we have discussed several things. If you'd like to contribute to the conversation, you can call us at area code 215-490-9832. I'll repeat, area code 215-490-9832. And you are listening to the Black Reality Think Tank. We are here every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 to 9 Central. And so we hope that you will continue to enjoy us. There is this is a part of the Time for an Awakening radio network, which is also a part of the Black Talk Radio Network as well. And this program is sponsored by Motherland Media, and it is produced by the Sankofa Historical Society. There are other programs here. You can go to our website at
Okay.
Is there something wrong?
Yeah, you kind of went out for a minute.
Oh, okay. All right. Hopefully it doesn't. Yeah. www.timeforanawakening.com. This is the network that you can go on and look. We have all of our programs are archived. You can look at those. There's a program that airs every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 Eastern to 1 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Eastern, called African Perspectives. And that's Brother Oshiemi Adelabu. And you're there every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Very dynamic program, good topics, messages of liberation and productivity for African people. We encourage you to listen to that. And right after his program at 1 o'clock, there's one called the Black People Matrix.
Hello?
Hello, brother.
I can hear you clicking out.
It may be. You got to remember, this is the Internet. So, you know, it goes in and out. Yeah, sometimes, you know. Hopefully, it'll last through us. You know, there's nothing really much I can control it. It is Internet. So, anyway, we have that program, Black People Matrix, and that comes on every Monday and Wednesday from 1 to 3. And that program is hosted by Brother Franklin Jones. So we encourage you to listen to that as well. So that is a line. We have other lineup of programs that you can just simply go to the www.timeforawakening.com website and get that program. So let's go over here to my brother Timothy. From Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Brother Timothy, should we call our ancestors slaves, or do you think that that is not correct?
I agree with what your brother that you have on now, who wrote a book, a fantastic book like that. And I'm going to ask him, what undergrad did he go to?
Undergrad, I went to the School of Hard Knocks.
that's one of the best ones.
That's one of the best educational systems in the world.
Listen, man, you know what? When they asked Malcolm X, one of the scholars asked him from England, they said, what school did you go to? He said, I went to the University of Books. And he said, look, I read. And the guy was amazed at how far he got with the eighth grade education he got, that he also got from Elijah Muhammad, who went to the second grade. But I'm going to say this, brother. Very early in my life, I became a member of the Nation of Islam. And one of the first things I was taught that came to the message of the black man was the African-American, that I call him that now, I didn't call him that then, was the so-called American Negro. He used that a lot. And so when I read The Miseducation of the Negro by Carl G. Woodson, right, and I saw how Booker T. Washington and Du Bois co-authored the book called The Negro in the South, I said, it's kind of hard to, like, get away from that word.
Yeah.
And I had to, as time went on, we started to use African-American. People right. refer to me as I'm a Muslim or I'm a Jew, and I'm not. And they would say, well, okay, I'm American, but I happen to be that with something else. So I like what you're doing. I have to go through a process again by saying that we were slaves. I have to say that we were enslaved. Now, it's a process with us. And like I was talking to Dr. Rogers a couple of days ago, maybe last week, I said, Dr. Rogers, I look at 1555, from 1555 to 1565 and 75 and to 1965. I said, Dr. Rogers, I thought we were almost out of this. And I said, Dr. Rogers, you're in the middle of this. So it's going to take a process, because the way we've been worked on and where we're at now, it doesn't seem like we've gotten far. But we're not too far from being emancipated. So all this information that I'm gathering, and one thing, no problem with this is that African Americans always had a problem with being called something. One time they didn't want you to call them Negro, they want you to call them colored.
Right.
Then they went from being colored to saying that I'm Native American, I'm Indian, I got so much Indian in me. So we have to come to grips with what we want to be and who we are and where we're from. Has a lot to going back to the motherland. So this is a process, my brother.
Yeah.
And I'm listening because I'm constantly evolving. I'm not perfect. And when I come across, listen, I've been bit by the same dog that you have been bit by.
Right. And see, this all ties into Africa. It all ties us to Africa. It really does. That's where it all loops back to home. That's why I started
off
with
that. I'm going to have to read that book.
PLO1. Yeah.
Dr. Bridges' book, If We Gain Your African Mind. That's like another part of what he's doing. We got to put all those books together.
We do. That's what we want to do. That's what we're trying to bring forward. Well, thank you so much, Brother Timothy. I appreciate it. I've got a couple other callers here I want to grab. Louisville, Kentucky. My brother on here. Would you like to say anything, or are you just listening?
I've just been listening. But this is a serious, relevant conversation. And I thank you for having the author on this evening to talk about his book.
Thank you.
My own personal feelings regarding these issues. My name is Michael Hicks. I'm from Louisville, Kentucky. Concerned citizen, brother,
all right,
striving to do all that I can.
All right.
Some of my thoughts along these lines are, and I can only speak personally, and I can only speak anecdotally right now,
right,
in regards to all of the things that you have been discussing this evening. And that is, I don't internalize what others did to my ancestors as a a psychic or psychological limit on who my people are, where they stand in this world, and what they deserve as a result of the centuries of enslavement that our ancestors suffered. I don't accept or embrace any stigma or any perception of a stigma from the word slave or slaves.
Okay.
I tend to use the word enslaved because that was a condition that they was placed under.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's ultimately not our ancestors' fault. So I don't carry any baggage from that. And I'm speaking now as a brother in his 50s. I'm speaking now as a brother who comes from a background. I went to the University of Louisville.
Right.
I have an undergraduate degree in Pan-African Studies. I've got minor in history, minor in political science.
All right.
I don't embrace those stigmas, and it's my ancestors' suffering and struggles which hardened my resolve to strive for justice, even in a country that doesn't appear to be willing to grant or give any kind of justice to the descendants of people who were enslaved,
right,
or the descendants of people in what you would call American chattel slavery.
Right.
But this has been a very interesting, illuminating conversation, and I'll be quiet now, and thank you for this show.
Thank you so much, my brother. Brother LaRue, you want to comment on that?
Yeah. Let me say this. There's the effects that slavery has had on us. And then, but mostly what I'm focusing on is the effect that the belief that our ancestors were slaves had. So there's kind of like two different kind of effects. But one, and they really are kind of, they're different. So the belief that if anybody believes that their ancestors were slaves, it has to have, at least on a subconscious level, an effect, because we are the descendants of our ancestors. And we know the apple don't fall far from the tree. That's just logic. And so we have to, so if we're calling them slaves, we have to incorporate at least some of the characteristics about believing they're a slave in ourselves. And a lot of black people do. Now, not everybody, but it sets up the stage for the belief of our inferiority. It sets up the a system of belief for self-hatred and self-destructive activity among us. Now, what I'm trying to do is clear this up so that we can get along with each other better. Now, that's the key. Now, how white folks treat us, that's a whole different thing. We might not never be able to straighten that out, but at least we can correct how we look and view and value each other.
Right, right. Okay, let me go over here to a brother. I don't know if he wants to say something or just listen. Brother Tusigna. Joseph Tusigna, are you?
Yes.
Yes, sir. Would you like to say something?
Yes, I'm in.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Would you care to make a comment or ask a question?
Well, I think about the situation, about the whole slavery stuff. In order for you guys to really actually know, you have to know your history. You know, you have to do probably some research on your family and actually know who your ancestors really were. You know, a lot of people don't know their history, so how can you actually say that your ancestors were slaves or anything like that, you know?
Okay.
And, you know, that's so key. And there's a reason why, because the idea of being a slave is so negative that it turns us off.
And so a lot of black people have little concern about learning their history, because it's like seeing a car wreck, and you see all the blood. It makes you turn your head away. And so these images that are being projected about how we operated under slavery causes us to do that. Now, if we had more images about how we fought back and how we, you know, did this and that, and caused them to come up with the emancipation, the talk of the Emancipation Proclamation, then we would have I think we would be more open to learn his.
Okay, brother.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, yeah, right. I know you blinked there just a minute.
Yeah, well,
too.
I think that you probably should start from the foundation of where it all started, back in like 1619. You know, when the first African slaves came over here on those ships with the English. You know, and I think that has a lot of answers to our unanswered questions, I think.
You know what? Well, I'm doing a little work on YouTube, and if you go in and if you type in why we shouldn't call our ancestors slaves or my name, LaRue Ned, then my channel should come up on YouTube, and that'll give you a little bit more understanding of where I'm coming from on this issue.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you, my brother. Let's go over here to my brother from North Carolina, brother White, is that you?
Yes, brother Rogers, it's me. How are you?
Fine, wonderful. Thank you so much for calling. How you doing? Happy New Year to you too.
Happy New Year to you too.
As well. Any comments on calling your ancestors slaves?
I feel like that there's no word in any language it could adequately describe what happened to African people.
Okay.
If you looked in the Encyclopedia of Hell, you wouldn't be able to find a description of what happened to us on any level.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say not to call your ancestors slaves, well, that's important, but what happened to people after 1865 when we weren't considered slaves, when we were treated just as bad?
Yes, it were.
So I try to have a mindset as to not to respond or to accept anything that came from the people who did what they did to my people. To develop a dictionary of my own,
okay,
to describe my people and who they were and what they were. To try to reach back to a time in Africa before we had any relationship with Europeans. To understand what type of people we were and how we lived and how we were able to do the things that we did. That we got on the same frequency and cadence that nature was on.
Okay.
And if you operating on the same frequency as nature, then you can accomplish the things that nature can accomplish because you're all talking to each other.
Now, that's the truth.
I agree.
Definitely agree.
I agree. But now, you know what? Some of us who kind of like fell through the cracks, this European culture has not had the same effect as it has had on a lot of others. But one of the things that turns us off, especially our children, is the first thing they learn about themselves, or who they are as a people, is that they are the descendants of slaves. And you don't really need a dictionary definition to know how they're teaching us that our ancestors were slaves. They're talking about, they were saying, give me liberty or give me death. And we're accepting slavery. And then once we accept that idea, then the next idea they throw on us, we live like savages in Africa before the Europeans showed up. And
A lot of us believe that, and it turns us off. It turns us off to wanting to know about our own history, and it even turns us off to education. So a lot of us is not even getting an education just because of. And without education, like James Brown said, you might as well be dead, because we're living in a high-tech society right now.
Yep.
And to not get an education is self-destructive behavior.
Right, right. I agree.
If you don't think...
Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry,
from an African's perspective, all the education in the world won't help you. It might make you accomplish material things, but you would be neurotic as hell.
Michael Jackson is a classic example. There's a lot of black people who are making big money who are not in tune with their essence or their spirit or their nature. And even with all that money, they still go into self-destruct mode. In fact, money gives them more power to self-destruct. So I agree. And that's why for us to educate ourselves about us. Now, the only thing that this system is educating us to do is to get a good job, but not how to live, and not how to appreciate each other, or even respect for us to respect each other. It doesn't feed our self-esteem like it feeds the Eurocentric self-esteem.
Okay.
Yeah, Malefi Asante said, if somebody bought something for $10 and sold it for $100, to a European, they'd be a good businessman. To an African, they'd be a thief.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Excellent. Okay, Brother White, thank you so much. I appreciate you. How's our good friend? I won't call his name, but how's he doing? Have you talked to him?
He's doing fine. I haven't talked to him in a couple of days. I thought he would be on the show tonight.
Okay.
I'm going to have to check with him tomorrow.
All right. Well, give him my regards. Give him my regards. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Let's go over here to Atlanta, Georgia. My brother over here, 404-453. Good afternoon to you. Did you want to say anything, or are you just listening? Okay, I guess he's just listening. All right, that's fine. North Carolina again. Last name Darity. Would you like to say something, or are you just listening? Okay, just listening. That's fine. Let's go to somebody that you might know, Brother LaRue. Well, I thought you might know him, but he might have hung up. No, he didn't. No, he didn't. 414-324.
Doc Rogers, what's up?
Yes, sir, my brother. Yes, my brother. You got somebody on here? Got somebody I'm talking to, you know.
That's right, LaRue.
LaRue, man.
I know that voice. Yeah. Yes, sir. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine, dear brother. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. I'm hanging in. I'm blessed by the one in time.
I hear you. Stay warm. Yeah, well, you know how I feel about calling our ancestors slaves. I think I was preaching that before the book came out.
I don't know about that.
Huh?
I don't know about that one.
We don't know about that.
Yeah.
I've been preaching not call our ancestors slaves for at least 30 years.
Don't yeah, that's true. Out. That's right.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
He used to do the ASCAP. He used to come on ASCAP.
Yeah, I firmly. I started this
in 93, but that's not the point. The point is that what we are trying to get over to our people is to correct this error. Now, who came out? That to me is really not even relevant. So, but the thing about it is that we need to put down the logic and the understanding, not just to get people to stop doing it, but people need to understand, because there's a lot of thought processes. And logic, there's a lot of logic that if we understand that logic, that's going to help us be more logical in other areas.
I agree, and so that's what I'm saying. I didn't mean to say it the way I did if it came out that way, but what I'm saying is what you're saying. The psychological damage of calling ourselves slaves, just like the other brother just a moment ago when he even got off, he said African slaves. We become conditioned to that. The European loves to call us slaves. In fact, that's who created it. It's just like he created racism. There was no such thing as race. He created that concept, giving himself the top position with everybody else at a lower position, with us at the lowest position. And what he has done to us has denigrated, demeaned, globally. And the only thing that we can do to correct that is don't buy into it. Reject it. No, we're not slaves. In fact, I'm taking even a step down further. We ain't black. We African.
Okay.
We're not black because they ain't white. They're not white. They developed the concept of collective whiteness as a framework for them to work together. As they begin to realize that, you know, in this world, we're the minority. So we're going to come together, everybody outside of us. Just as Francis Crest Wilson said, when they got the idea that when he went around the world taking everybody's stuff in the name of and having intercourse with the females, with the women they encountered through rape, the offspring didn't look like them, causing a feeling of inadequacy and a feeling of genetic annihilation. So we got to control that. And the best way to control that is what we teach them, what we give them, what we tell them, and to make them refute anything else.
My thing is about us controlling us. What white folks do, that's on them. And so I'd rather for us to be proactive. But, I mean, when you're under attack, sometimes you got to be reactive. But the bottom line is how we see ourselves and how we react. That should be our first hurdle. Is overcoming the division that exists among us as a people, the self-esteem issues, the self-destructive behavior, those are the things I'm aiming at. And the foundation of that is us believing that we are the descendants of an inferior people and savage type people. So that's what I'm trying to clear up. That should be our focus, I believe. Once we get that underground straightened out, then we can start dealing with the other issues in a correct way. One of the things that really messed us up was the busing, because we thought that they gonna give us the proper education that we needed. And ever since we've been being integrated, our economic system that went down, everything has gone to HECK. So I'm trying to get at is how we view and value each other. That should be the main focus.
Okay.
But see, once again, that's hard to do in this environment. One of the things that we have to understand what we are up against, what we're in, and this system is the most deepest attack on the African mind. Unlike times previous, uneven like when they first brought us here, as captives. In fact, when you see the word slave, that's the word you should put on there, captive, because that's who we were. We were captured and imprisoned. We're not slaves. So anytime you see the word slave, try your best, because once you start doing that, you begin to think differently. Your image and your vision is different.
Right.
That's my point.
The European differently. Oh, I know your point, LaRue. Me and you, we go on about this all the time.
Right.
I know your point.
Let me.
Is my point. We're trying to recapture the minds of our people.
Right. That's the bottom line. We've got about 15 more minutes. I need to, as a couple more people, I want to just get. And then I want LaRue to tell our audience how to get a copy of his book, if they so desire. I want to, there's somebody else on, Brother LaRue, you might know, familiar. They might want to say something. I'm not sure if they're just listening. 414-399, are you just listening, or did you want to say something?
I'm just listening. There you go. I'm just listening, Papa.
Okay, beautiful, beautiful. All right. Well, I'm sure you know that voice, Brother LaRue. But he said he's just listening. Let me go to my brother from Montgomery, Alabama. My brother, any comments tonight on this subject? Should we call our ancestors slaves? What's your
thought? Yes, good evening. Peace and blessings to you, Dr. Rogers, and your guests and everyone else on the phone. I'm just listening in, and I wanted to check in with you,
yes.
Number one. And number two, I thought I may have heard across the airwaves about ASCAT. And I was wondering, yes. Is there a contact in Atlanta,
right here,
I could touch bases with be able to learn more about what they're doing in the Atlanta and in the southern region.
All right, let me bring Brother Oshie back on. He's very active with ASCAT, has been for a long time. Brother Oshie, can you answer his question?
Sure. He could give me a call. We don't take up too much more of their time on the radio program. You can give me a call. I'm with ASCAT here in the southeast region. My number is 414-324-5796. 414-324-5796.
Got it. Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you,
the rest of the
Thank you. Okay. Brother LaRue, how can someone get a copy of your book? If they
go online, you can order it off of Amazon.com, or they can contact you and then we can go from there. You know what I'm saying?
But you said they can't go to Amazon and get it?
Yeah, you can go to Amazon.com.
Okay. All right.
And order it.
Fantastic.
Or you know what I'm saying? They can go through you or, you know, we'll work it out. We'll work it out.
Okay. All right.
But you know what? I wanted to, something just popped in my mind.
Okay.
Okay. We have what they call prisoners of war. And prisoners of war really acted no differently than we did under slavery. But if you call a prisoner of war a slave, they would be insulted. And so we jump up and down about the word, the use of the N-word, and then when they call our ancestors slaves, we don't have a problem with that.
Okay.
And so
I like that.
That goes to show you. That goes to show you how deep that message is.
Yeah, it's embedded. It's definitely embedded into the psyche, no doubt.
And so, we need to start at home. We need to start educating ourselves. But that's where, and you know what? If the school's teaching that, because that's us that we our ancestors were slaves, but. I think if we start teaching that at home, and if we start honoring our ancestors, man, I'm gonna tell you this one time I was at a Thanksgiving dinner with the family, and so they was thanking Jesus and thanking everybody and blessing the food and everything. So being the oldest there, they asked me to say something, and I said, you know what? I think we should thank our ancestors, you know, for the here and now, because we couldn't be here without them. One of the guys raised his head up and said, "You think that's the state of mind we in?" So we can understand how this self-destructive behavior and the high divorce rate and the child abuse and all this other negative activity that's going on between us as a people is going on.
Okay. Okay.
Dr. Rogers, can I say something now?
Yes, go right ahead. Go right ahead.
To call our ancestors slaves would imply that our ancestors didn't exist before the 1600s and 1700s.
That's true. That's true.
No, it doesn't. I disagree with that. What I'm saying is that when we look from where we are now backwards, we're directly connected to the people that we're calling our ancestors, but it does go back to Africa. It's not denying our African heritage. In fact, what it's designed to do is open up the door so that we can begin to appreciate our African heritage. But it gets cut off in America under this idea about our ancestors being slaves and then savages.
That's what I was saying. Mm-hmm. That if we consider our ancestors as slaves, we forgot that our ancestors existed a long time before they came into contact with Europeans and had built civilizations when other people were living in caves.
Right.
Hey, right, because because you.
I see what you're saying.
As you're saying, right, you weren't using the word slavery. That didn't exist in Africa. Matter of fact, do you want to talk about that whole terminology as it relates to African systems of captivity and so forth? The word Impukani, Maafa. You want to say anything about those words, Brother LaRue?
That's the invasion of when the Europeans began to invade, and that, man, that's a terrible history. I like to think of slavery as being the microcosm, and what happened in Africa is the macrocosm. Man, so we really can't blame Africans for thinking like they're thinking right today because of what happened. Now, we let them in because we had no idea that kind of evil even existed. The use of human servitude existed for thousands of years before even the Europeans showed up in Africa.
Right.
But we had a humane system of human servitude.
Right.
Our system is humane. We had no idea that what the European had in mind with the term slavery or colonialism.
Right.
So we can't blame. But look, we're not the only people that let the Europeans in.
Right.
They did the same thing in South America. They did the same thing with the Native Americans, etc. They had a program that they used, and it worked over and over again. So African people are no different than any other people in the world.
Exactly.
And neither are we.
And see, I think that's what someone said, one of the callers earlier tonight said something about knowing the history of the system of captivity and what that meant in terms of being in Africa as well as throughout the rest of the world. And some of those systems were vicious. Lumumba does that. He
After the Europeans came in, though.
Right. Well, yeah, but I'm going back. I'm going even back further than even European, going back to some of the Arabic invasions and looking at a lot of that from that perspective. And I guess it goes to the whole system of war, first of all, and what war is and war culture. And when we turn everything over, my argument is that I think they got to a point that the environment, the culture of the world turned to war. And as a result of it turning to war.
Can you hear me?
Let me finish this one. As it turned to war, then we began to see something. I got one caller here I'm going to grab right quick. He just came on, 646 New York City. A comment? Any comment? 646-626, any comments, my brother?
Hey, Dr. Rogers, this is Jay. I just wanted to say hello to you, brother. I hadn't spoken to you since the new year, man, and I heard you right quick. And I said, let me give the elders some love and good. Give them a call and say hello to them, man.
Thank you, Brother Jay. Thank you very much.
How have you been, my brother?
Doing good.
I'm doing good, man. I recognize your voice, man.
well, who else is on the line? Because I just walked to the house and turned your brothers on. So I'm not sure, but I wanted to give the elder his due for the new year.
Hey, man, I hope Dr. Rogers has your information. I'm going to try to get it from him, man. And, man, maybe we can touch base or something.
Who is this I'm speaking with?
This is Brother LaRue Ned. He is the author of that book, Why We Shouldn't Call Our Ancestors Slaves. He's been on Brother Oshie's show several times.
Okay, yeah. I know who the brother is. I'm sorry about that. But listen, Dr. Rogers, why don't y'all just carry on? I just wanted to say Happy New Year to you because I know you're going off What time are you going off tonight, 11?
I go off at 9. I go off at 9 Central, 10 your time, Eastern time.
Okay, so you get ready to go off.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we'll speak next week, and I'll talk to your guests.
Okay, thank you so much, Brother Jay. I appreciate that. We very much said. I really enjoyed Brother Jay. He definitely has some deep input to a lot of the things that we talk about. He's on Brother Oshie's a lot. He does that. I'm gonna close out with the last thing. I wanted Brother Oshie to do something for me real quick. Brother Oshie, I know I just talked about your program and Brother Franklin. I know that the sister has a program. Is she on now, or is she going to be off for a while?
Yes, she's on.
Okay, tell the audience about her a little bit. Give them some idea of what her program and the date and time.
Right, Sister Marcy Lee here. She moved to here to Atlanta as well, but she used to do a program in Cleveland, and so she's going to have her program come on after my program on Fridays at 1 p.m. Eastern. It's called Esoteric Review, Sister Marcy Lee.
Okay.
Esoteric Review, and it's a one-hour program. And when she aired last week, not just past Friday, but Friday before last, man, sounded great. Sounded good.
Yes.
It was a good program.
Yeah, she was. She did have a good program. I listened as well. That was very dynamic. Right. And Brother Oshie, mm-hmm. we definitely appreciate you, man. You sponsoring these programs. You're making sure that we get the word out there. Don't underestimate what you're doing. I don't take it for granted. I just want everybody, the audience, know that this is our sponsor. We appreciate him, and he's been magnificent.
But listen, Doc, you know how I appreciate you particularly and what we're trying to do with Brother Elliot, with Time for an Awakening, and Brother Scotty Reed with Black Talk Radio Network, is to get the concept and the idea of Pan-Africanism.
There we go.
Of independence and self-determination and liberation and sovereignty. These are ideas that need to be discussed because they're the ideas there really is no other alternative to.
Yes.
It's either unify or die,
there
Pan-Africanism or perish.
Right.
These just ain't cliches. It is a fact.
That's right.
You know?
That's exactly right. Well, Brother LaRue, thank you.
Even if the European.
Right.
Yeah,
Brother LaRue, thank you so much, man. You and I had talked about this, and I really appreciate you coming on. You know I'm going to be having you back, you can expect that. Because I wanted to talk about the Black Laws and tell us about that book, but we're going to have to deal with that later. We only got about 2 minutes. I thank all of our listening audience for your being on tonight. We'll be back here next Tuesday. We have another dynamic discussion. We're going to talk about the book of Revelations and what it's got to do with black folk and looking at the seven seals and all the symbolism of all of that stuff and how our ancestors used that. Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Marcus Garvey, Nat Turner used that book by John the Revelator to deal with some issues and teachings of our people. So we're going to talk about that next week. And I appreciate all of you. Have a wonderful and productive week, and we'll see you next Tuesday at 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central. Thank you.
Yeah.